Hi, I'm Nora Cavani, and this is Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, your trusted source on child gut health, brought to you by Alba Health, live on the UK Health Radio. Thousands of studies now link a child's gut health to common symptoms like colic, constipation, and eczema, as well as to long-term health risks like allergies, asthma, and obesity. In each episode, I speak with global experts and scientists to explore the latest research on children's nutrition, gut health, and well-being. Let's dive into the science. Did you know that eczema affects up to 20% of children worldwide, and it's not just a skin condition? Increasingly, research shows that it's tied to the immune system, the gut microbiome, and even long-term health. Today, we have a great guest, Cory Capozza, founder and executive director of Global Parents for Eczema Research. Cory's son has moderate to severe eczema, and she has turned that personal experience into a professional mission. She founded this nonprofit organization to uncover the latest research on eczema. Her background is in public health and research, and she has authored articles on the caregiver experience and the impact of eczema on families. She also serves as a patient reviewer for national research bodies and has represented families' voices all the way up to the FDA. In this episode, we'll explore Cory's personal story as a parent navigating eczema for her son, what the latest science says about causes and the hope for a cure, and how Global Parents for Eczema Research is giving families evidence-based information, peer support, and a voice in shaping future treatments. Welcome, Cory. Super exciting to have you.
Thank you, Nora. I'm super happy to be here and really enjoyed hearing my name pronounced with proper Italian pronunciation there. It's rare.
Yes, I know. It's very Italian. Let's get started with your personal story. How did you navigate eczema for your son? Tell us how you started also Global Parents for Eczema Research.
Sure. So my story begins with my son, who was born in 2008, so a while ago now. And his eczema actually didn't appear until he was around 9 months old, so a little bit later. And he went from being this sort of happy, giggly baby, you know, great sleeper, smiling all the time, to just really miserable. The eczema appeared in small patches at first, but escalated and covered his whole body. And as parents, you know, it's horrible to see your child suffer, not to be able to sleep, not be able to play. He was really distracted by the itch all day and couldn't really engage in normal baby things. We would see him trying to eat and then just be distracted by itch and not be able to even finish a meal. So like most parents in that position, we took him to the pediatrician, to an allergist, to a dermatologist, and it seemed as though people had never seen eczema that severe and didn't quite know what to do with it. And at that time, there really hadn't been a new treatment for eczema in children for decades, really. It was topical steroids. And if that didn't work, more topical steroids. And so his eczema worsened to the point where we made a really painful decision for us to put him on an immunosuppressant, an old school immunosuppressant that's used for like transplants and things like that. It had really concerning side effects. It just didn't feel right. And so eventually we actually took him out of state for inpatient treatment in Colorado. And he was there for 10 days. And eventually we did get his eczema under control. But I think afterwards, my husband and I both felt like, why doesn't anyone know how to treat this condition? And, you know, eczema, when it's mild, is, you know, can be relatively easy to control. But when it's moderate to severe, it's very hard to combat. And so, you know, we were, late night on the internet, you know, pursuing all sorts of things. And, you know, when people see your child with a bright red face and skin, they tell you to do this and that. And you try it because you're desperate. But we really felt like the way forward for these kids is research that tells us what to do. So we're not guessing, and it shouldn't be up to parents. It shouldn't be up to families to be using a trial and error approach on their kids. So it was that experience and that feeling that led to founding of Global Parents for Eczema Research in 2015. Really, it was just two parents, and we applied for a small grant from the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute to start to set a parent and family-focused agenda, research agenda for eczema. So my story is sort of parallels the organization's story, and it's been around for 10 years now. So as my son has grown up and thankfully has grown out of eczema, the organization has grown as well. And today we work on a lot of things, but one of the key ones is we're trying to understand what causes eczema and hopefully how to prevent it. But in the meantime, we're trying to support kids and families with the best evidence-based practices so that kids get proper treatment and care and hopefully can get relief from it in the way that my son did.
It's so inspiring, and your work is so needed. I'm so happy that you're taking this forward and you're really pushing knowledge in this area, because it's very, very needed. Of course, I had eczema myself in a very severe way on all of my body as an adult, but I also grew up with my brother having quite severe eczema when he was a kid, actually since he was maybe 6 months old until 3 years old. So I saw that in my family, and I saw also my mom going crazy, my mom and my dad going crazy over that. Can you tell us a bit more about how that impacted the whole family? I think a lot of times people, doctors even, don't understand how big of a thing this can be in a family.
Yeah, I think first of all, I'm sorry to hear that about you and your brother. It's miserable. But I think one of the things with eczema is it's just so misunderstood. I mean, people think of it as a cosmetic rash. And really, yeah, the impacts are not visible for the most part. You know, you don't see the feeling of being unbearably itchy all the time. You can't see that a child and a family have been awake all night. You know, you can't see the stress and anxiety that come from not knowing when a flare is going to come and not knowing if you're going to be able to control it. I think for caregivers, it's really, really hard to see your child suffer and not be able to help. And so I think a common experience, especially for moms, is they're trying everything under the sun to help their kid and it's just not working. And you have this feeling that you're sort of failing at your job, your only job, your most important job, which is to keep your child safe. So there's a lot there that's not visible. It's much more than just the rash. And it has these very serious psychosocial impacts. It makes me tear up because, you know, these kids and these parents suffer so much. And I think it's just really underappreciated. Eczema isn't necessarily going to kill you, but it is going to make you miserable. And I think that's the key take-home message.
I completely agree. And I've seen it in my life and in my family. I think on top of that, a lot of times you might find out that you have food allergies or other allergies, contact allergies, and that affects your life, right? Imagine, like, for a child, if they cannot eat eggs or gluten or milk, they cannot go to a birthday party and eat a cake with other kids. You know, there's a lot of restrictions and worries that come with that that are not very understood. I completely relate with what you said, that a lot of times it's thought of something aesthetic or cosmetic. Yeah. Some people say, no, but don't worry, people don't see it. And it's like, well, I'm not worried about people seeing it. That's not the problem. It hurts like crazy.
Right.
And you can't sleep at night because you're itching and your entire body is saying, alarm, alarm. The feeling is very, very painful. So I completely relate to that. What was your experience going to pediatricians and doctors? What options were you offered back then?
Yeah, I mean, it was really a different era. I mean, I've actually heard physicians say back in that era that, you know, their least favorite skin condition patients or families that come through are those with eczema or atopic dermatitis, because they're so miserable and they didn't have good tools to help them. And that's an awful position to be in as a healthcare provider as well. The condition wasn't well understood, you know, and so I think the common experience, particularly a decade ago, was kind of bouncing between provider and trying to find someone who understood what was going on. I think that one of the reasons we started Global Parents for Eczema Research is because a lot of families, including my own, we would go to one provider who would say one thing and then the other would say the opposite. And it's like, well, who's right? I mean, how am I supposed to know, right? Like, we need research to tell us, should you bathe your child all the time or should you bathe your child, you know, as little as possible? And those are, for example, conflicting things that you hear out there. So I think you really need to, as a parent, as a patient, be an advocate for yourself and find a healthcare provider who's going to be interested in finding a solution. And that takes time, you know, finding your triggers, figuring out the root cause, doing the tests, taking the time to empower you to have a regimen that works. And that, unfortunately, sort of can be trial and error to find that person who's going to be that partner for you. And help you sort of get a handle on things with care and time.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tennis Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Why do you think it's so difficult to find agreement across doctors? Why do you think there's so much confusion around eczema and its treatment?
Yeah, I mean, I think eczema is super complex. You know, it's not a cosmetic condition. It involves the immune system, so you have to understand immunology. It does involve the skin, so some knowledge of dermatology is important. We have a microbiome component, you know, and that really sits with like infectious disease. And that's where those experts are. There's this really important like allergy component, you know, and we're starting to understand that like what's happening in the gut, you know, the gut imbalance is also really key. So everyone has their little piece of the puzzle that they're experts in, but having someone really understand the full complexity of the condition is pretty rare, particularly in the way that it's treated, at least in the United States. So that's number one. And then number two, most children with eczema are treated by a pediatrician. And a pediatrician needs to be an expert in 1,000 conditions. You know, eczema isn't their expertise. They're treating, you know, the flu, they're treating earaches, et cetera, et cetera. So of course they're not an expert in this super complex condition. And so I think if you are dealing with something more than mild eczema, you really need that expertise, which you won't necessarily find with a pediatrician just because that's not their training. The final reason is, of course, that sometimes we just don't know. The research isn't there. We don't know.
Regarding your first point, so eczema is a complex condition. What do we know today? What are the possible causes of eczema and mechanisms behind it?
I think in the past, we thought there was more of a genetic component. And there is a genetic component. There's this filaggrin gene mutation, but it probably is accounting for a minority of cases because we've seen this big increase in eczema. And so that type of increase can't be explained by genetics. Genes don't change in that way so rapidly over time. So there's clearly an environmental component. It's an immune system mediated condition. There's this overreaction of the immune system. And that's why oftentimes, you know, if you approach eczema with just surface treatment and you've got, you know, the whole immune system involved, it's hard to get it under control because you need to quiet the immune system, you need to rebalance the immune system. So there's that piece. And then there's this microbiome piece we were just talking about. So in and skin barrier. So let me talk about the skin barrier first. And people with eczema, you know, if you think of the skin as maybe like a brick wall with tight junctions, in people with eczema, that's compromised. So, you know, the mortar isn't there. And so it's easier to sort of breach the wall and get through. And when that happens, when the skin barrier is not doing its job, which is to keep, you know, things out of the body and keep moisture in, you have irritants and allergens and pathogens entering the body and causing the immune system to go into attack mode. And so we see that in eczema where this leaky skin barrier is causing the immune system to get activated and flaring up. And then the microbiome pieces, you know, this is a really new area that we're still learning about, but we see in the skin of people with eczema that they have certain species. I mean, there's a signature to it that's different from healthy skin. And one of the hallmarks is an overgrowth or an overcolonization of Staph aureus bacteria. And we see that Staph aureus bacteria is also much more prominent when there's an eczema flare. So we know that particular strain is involved in eczema, and I think we're still teasing out, is it something that's causing eczema or is it something that's showing up on skin that's not working well? And then finally, there's this gut microbiome piece where we see some really key species are missing in kids with eczema. And so the question is, if we restore those species, if we return the gut microbiome to look more like a healthy gut that we see in healthy kids, can we, you know, stop eczema? Can we eradicate it or reverse it?
That's very well explained. I actually observed on my own skin, I actually tested my own skin microbiome, and I found this overgrowth of Staphylococcus aureus. I actually, interestingly, I found that in my gut as well.
Oh, interesting.
At times. Only at times, not always. It happened to me to actually have a secondary infection of Staphylococcus aureus. That can happen in people with eczema. And at that time, I found that bacterium in my gut as well. Maybe one follow-up question here is, what do we know about the link between the gut microbiome and the skin? Many people are surprised about that or don't know about it.
One of the challenges with eczema skin is you can treat the staph on the skin with an antibiotic or different antibacterial therapies, but it tends to come right back. And so the question is, where is it hanging out? What is the reservoir for staph? And one theory is that it's the gut. You know, it's hanging out in the gut, and then when there's an opportunity, it resurfaces, as well as the nose, that may also be a reservoir for staph. In terms of the relationship between the skin and the gut, you know, the skin is interesting. It's not just a wrapper. It's not just this cosmetic wrapper that we try and make pretty. It's an organ, a very important organ. It's the body's largest organ, and it interfaces with the immune system, number one. And I think the gut, I mean, this is relatively new, our understanding, but it's a major site for the immune system. So I think that the connection is, you know, in the gut, these bacteria, these microbes are interacting with our immune system, especially in young kids, and helping to train it to behave in different ways. And because eczema is mediated by the immune system, having an immune system in balance that's being trained and taught by the microbes in the gut is really important for ensuring that you don't have this overreactive type 2, what we call type 2 inflammatory response going on that we see with eczema. So I think they're both, the skin and the gut are both places where we interface with the immune system and teach it to either react or to stay in balance. So I think that is the connection. And then there may also be this connection where microbes in the gut actually influence the microbiome that we see on the skin. And I think kind of more to be studied there to really understand how that works and how the microbes move around.
And you mentioned earlier that eczema is increasing in prevalence. Do we know why? What are the hypotheses on why this is increasing?
I don't think we definitively know why, but there's some clues that are coming from the research that are helping us to, I think, understand that question. First is use of antibiotics, which have expanded over time. And we see that when mothers and babies are exposed to antibiotics, they have a higher risk of eczema. And that risk is in relation to the exposure. So the more antibiotics, the higher the risk. So that's some compelling evidence that that's at play. Another culprit is all of the chemicals that we're now exposed to through air pollution, through chemical detergents in the home, through processed foods. And these are causing inflammation and changing the nature of our gut. Taken together, these exposures are likely contributing to the rise in eczema. But I think, you know, the jury is still out a little bit. There's been some really interesting research coming out of the Swiss Institute of Allergy with Chesmi Actis's group, looking at things like surfactants, industrial, you know, more harsher detergents that are in the home, even like soaps, rinse aids, laundry soaps. And all of these things are disrupting what we call the epithelial barrier, or these linings in the body of which the skin is one. So I think we're going to be finding that these aspects of modern living, and especially the chemicals that are now part of our daily lives, are part of the contributor, including microplastics, which are now emerging as a major health issue. We know that microplastic ingestion or microplastics in the body contribute to inflammation, and eczema is an inflammatory condition. So that all lines up.
When it comes to antibiotics and the gut microbiome, there is some research pointing towards the gut microbiome of children and infants. What do we know about that?
Well, we know the gut microbiome of children and infants is changing. And there was a very, I think, eye-opening study that just came out maybe 2 months ago that found that it's something like a quarter of kids in the United States were missing this key species in the gut that's important for immune system development. And you probably know the numbers better than I do, but a half or two-thirds had a lot less of it, were deficient in it. So we're seeing these big shifts in the bacteria, you know, the microbes in our gut that are super important for immune system development. And that's likely a result of some of those things we just talked about, changes in how we eat, exposures, antibiotics. But these are all leading to these big shifts.
Yes, definitely. There was this very interesting study, especially showing that bifidobacteria, which are one type of bacteria that really train the immune system, are lacking in more and more kids today. So that could be potentially worrying. We know that kids that lack those bacteria completely or have them reduced have a higher likelihood of eczema, but also of allergies and immune-related conditions. So that's also what we observe and what has been observed in many different studies. Maybe let's also go to the treatment options. What are the treatment options today?
Yeah, so I think the cornerstone of eczema treatment is first optimal skincare practices. We have some new topical therapies now for kids that are not steroids. And parents have always been very concerned about putting topical steroids on their children. But we do have these newer generation treatments. They work very well. They're safe. We now also have what we call biologics. And these are drugs that are taken by injection, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes a month. And now we're seeing ones that could be as infrequently as quarterly. And these are very targeted therapies that address the imbalances in the immune system that we see with eczema. Earlier, I was talking about how in eczema, the immune system becomes imbalanced, overreacts, and it has what we call a Th2 or type 2 inflammatory response. And these drugs really correct that. They bring it back into alignment. Most of them have been well studied in children, and some of them are approved down to age infants. So those are now available. I think we have some unanswered questions about how long you need to be on those therapies, if you can taper off, and those are really important patient and parent-centered questions that need to be answered. We're starting to get those answers. Now we also have oral therapies, and these are pills. Most are not approved for young kids. They're for adolescents and adults, and these are pretty big guns, so they tend to be something that you would use if these other options aren't working. But one thing that's really great about them for some patients is they act pretty quickly on itch. So you'll see that really quick resolution of itch, which is such a relief for people. So also a godsend. Beyond these prescription treatments, though, I think there's a lot of lifestyle interventions. And we're starting to see a lot of promise with, for example, red and blue light therapy as potential treatments for eczema. There's complementary approaches with Chinese medicine that are now being studied. Microbiome treatments where we're putting bacteria back on the skin or in the gut to try and correct those imbalances. So I think we're going to see a lot more new, interesting ideas coming in the coming years, and it's a super exciting time for eczema treatment.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
You said a lot of very interesting things, so I want to deep dive in each one of them. The first one you said was just topical treatments, like we're talking about cream, We get so many questions from parents on what's the best cream? Should I go for oil-based or not use any cream at all? What do we know about that?
Yeah, this is one area where it's just outrageous to me how little we know. I mean, we tell parents to smother their kids twice a day in moisturizer, yet we don't know which type of moisturizer is the most beneficial. I think what we do know at this point is that a tri-lipid moisturizer or a ceramide-containing moisturizer is probably the best way to go, but I would love to see some studies on this. I know of a few that are happening, and I can't wait to share the results with people. But I would say at this point, the best we can say is tri-lipid or ceramide-containing moisturizer is probably the way to go. I think it's important when you put it on, you know, evening or morning, and it's important when you do it in terms of bathing. There's a soak and seal method that can improve the skin barrier. Generally suggested not taking hot showers or baths, which can dry out the skin, you know, very lukewarm, very brief. Avoiding harsh cleansers, which can further break down the skin barrier. And then this is one where the devil's in the details. And I think if I could share one thing with parents right now, it might be this. So simple. Don't use a tub moisturizer. Kids with eczema use so much moisturizer that often we buy these big tubs, right? But it's so easy to contaminate a tub when your hand is going in and out. You know, maybe you can't fully wash off bacteria or allergens from your hand, and then you're applying it to your child's skin. So find one with a pump or that you can squeeze out where you're not going to contaminate that moisturizer with things that are going to make the eczema worse. It does matter how you do it.
What about the impact of clothes, the material of clothes? Does that matter for eczema?
It likely does matter. And I think, you know, what I would say would be, a good approach is to use natural fabrics, a cotton, silk, wool, that type of thing. Some eczema patients don't like wool because it can be irritating. But synthetic fabrics, we're finding contain a lot of microplastics. And so, you know, really sticking with more natural, breathable fabrics is probably the way to go.
What about soaps, laundry detergents, any type of body products? Do we know if there are some ingredients to avoid or to look for?
Yes. And I think this is a place where you can easily implement some changes that likely will benefit your child. So really be looking for those very gentle detergents that don't have a lot of fragrance, that are free of sodium lauryl sulfate and some of these other surfactants that are likely to irritate the skin barrier. And then being very careful about what's put on a child's skin. And I think there's some great resources out there that let you see sort of the ingredient list of different cleansers. But, you know, harsh soaps on the skin of a child with eczema are probably not a good idea.
Then now going to topical treatments. So I think everyone who is familiar with eczema knows cortisone. But you mentioned that there are other topical treatments that are safe and accepted, well-researched, that are not cortisone. Which type of compounds are we talking about here?
You know, these are, without sort of getting into the specific brands, they target different aspects. One of them is a topical JAK inhibitor. So it works really quickly on itch. And some of these key symptoms, it can be used proactively and you know, you can use it in a cyclical way, use it for a while and stop. There's another one that is, you know, targeting a different mechanism. And I don't know how deep to get into these, but different than the JAK inhibitor altogether, that was used with psoriasis. So we have a lot of data on it and its safety. That one was recently improved. And there was just another one that came out that is also safe, was approved down to kids age 2. So the FDA was very confident in its safety, has yet a different mechanism, and appears to also offer really rapid relief up to moderate eczema in the topical form. So these are really promising. And I think it's really important for parents to know what their options are and to advocate for those. We have a treatment navigator that could help on our website for people to know what new therapies are available.
Fantastic. And do people have to take them for life, or are they targeting the root cause of eczema?
So for the topical therapies, no. I mean, they're meant to be used during a flare. And you treat the flare, then you back off. And hopefully your regular skincare regimen maintains the skin in the meantime. But if a flare returns, you can use it again. The ones where we're not really sure how long you need to be on them are the biologic therapies, the injectables, and possibly also the pills. I think we're still learning there. There is evidence coming out that, interesting evidence, that if you use these biological therapies, which target the immune system, in kids early, you may be able to stop eczema, you know, stop it in its tracks. And so that's pretty fascinating that, you know, if you can interrupt this overreaction of the immune system and put it back into balance, then these kids may go on to have, you know, normal experiences. And I think that's really exciting.
Do we know if there are side effects to these therapies, so the oral therapies and the injectables, and how severe are they in terms of side effects?
Yes. Yeah, so the injectable therapies do have some relatively minor side effects. Some patients do find them difficult. For example, with some of the injectables, we see eye irritation, conjunctivitis, and other issues. Or, you know, some experience a reddening of the face. We think these things might be related to an interesting, and talking about the microbiome, might be related to an overgrowth of fungal species that happens at least early on in the course of the treatment. But I think we still don't totally know. You know, without sort of overhyping them, I think one thing that we are seeing that's interesting with some of these treatments, or at least one of them, is that long-term data, they seem to have a benefit for also allergies, allergic rhinitis, and possibly, you know, asthma. So, you know, when we get the immune system behaving properly, you may get kind of bonuses for these other allergic conditions that tend to come along with eczema. And that's really exciting to be able to see relief from not just eczema, but these other things that these kids are often also confronting.
That's a very good point. We didn't mention that eczema, allergies, and asthma are very often connected and they go together. Why is that and how does that work?
The backstory to all of that is that when you have this leaky skin barrier, it causes things like, for example, peanut dust or protein to enter the body. And the body isn't supposed to be exposed to things like that through the skin. And it really doesn't know how to deal with it. And it goes on high alert and overreacts. The way that the body is meant to be introduced to these things is through the gut. When a child ingests peanut or peanut, you know, butter or these different things, the body's more equipped to kind of understand what that is and have an appropriate response to it. But through the skin, it's treated as, you know, invader, foreign, and it's attacked so that the immune system is set up to do that when it sees it again. So these kids with eczema who have been exposed to it in that way, when they then go to eat, you know, peanuts, when they're starting to be introduced to foods, the immune system has already been taught to go on high alert when it detects that. And so then we see them developing allergy. So this explains why we see this type of progression and why it's so important actually to get eczema under control early, because we may be able to stop these other things from developing.
Right. A lot of people say, oh, a lot of kids grow out of eczema and just wait it out. Do you think there is a case for addressing it actually early on instead of waiting?
Absolutely. I wish we wouldn't say that to people. A, we don't know if they're going to grow out of it. And B, you know, why would you let a child suffer with this, you know, on the off chance that they do grow out of it? And then C, we know from the research that if you treat eczema aggressively and get it under control, that child will have less severe eczema. That child will not develop other conditions. That child will not develop this mental health burden. So I think there's absolutely every reason to treat eczema early, often and aggressively.
completely agree. You also mentioned the microbiome, both the skin microbiome and gut microbiome. What do we know in terms of treatments?
I think that we're still waiting for the silver bullet there. There have been some topical skin treatments, but from the data that I've seen, they're not effective enough alone to be a standalone treatment. They're sort of complementary, I think, at this stage. But I think it's a really interesting area. Like, if you could control staph with sort of a good bacteria topical treatment, that would make a lot of sense. And then with the gut microbiome therapies, there's a lot happening in that area. As I'm sure you know, this is your area of expertise. And I think we're starting to learn, A, what's missing in the guts of these allergic and atopic patients, and what is the most promising thing to put back in there to correct it. And I'm super excited to see where, you know, companies like Alba Health and others go with this. It's just really fascinating, number one, and exciting to see where this will go.
You touch upon the gut microbiome. What about diet? Is there a link between eczema and diet, and what do we know so far?
Yes. I mean, I think there's a lot of interest in, you know, an anti-inflammatory diet, a ketogenic diet, all these things which may benefit eczema. I think there's some evidence for, you know, a whole foods diet that's low in processed foods, for example, and things like that. I would say that the evidence isn't entirely there yet, but one thing that does seem quite clear is the chemicals and substances that are in processed foods to give them a longer shelf life. So emulsifiers, preservatives, these are clearly not good for your epithelial barriers. And I mentioned this term before, but it's basically, you know, the linings in your body. So epithelial barrier is in your nose and your lungs and your gut and your skin. And these substances cause those barriers to break down. People with allergic conditions, with eczema, should be avoiding these highly processed foods that are rich in emulsifiers and preservatives, which are not good for these critical barriers in the body.
As you know, at Alba Health, we are looking a lot into the gut microbiome and its relationship with eczema and other conditions. So we have a clinical study running. But as you said, there's a lot of things that we don't know. There are some things that we know, and we're very excited to progress that and to have this conversation with you and to follow you guys and see what you surface in terms of research. It was fantastic, Corey, to go through all the main advancements in eczema research. I think it's very exciting that things are changing, that there are more options today, and then we're learning more and more, but also to see such a community mobilize and see parents and people with eczema mobilizing to find a cure, to find solutions. It's about time. We need to find better solutions for this very, very difficult condition. So thank you so much for taking us through all of your knowledge. And my last question is, if people want to learn more about eczema research, maybe they have a child with eczema or they have eczema themselves, where can they find you and what are the best resources to get started?
Yeah, well, also, thank you for having me, Nora. It's awesome to talk to you and have this conversation between two people who know eczema personally really well, unfortunately, but also the science. I think a great place to start is our website, which is gper.org. And we've got some great sort of eczema 101 resources, but you can also find there our podcasts and our caregiver support program, which is specifically for parents of children with eczema to deal with the isolation, the loneliness, the mental health impacts, and to really find a community with other parents. We are, you know, 5,000 parents globally, all working on this, all trying to find better treatment options and also a cure at this point. So really welcome anybody listening who wants to be part of that to join us. And I'm really excited that we are also funding eczema research now. We're in our second year of funding research on prevention. We hope to get to a cure by 2030. So if you're excited about that too, we would love to get in touch. So yeah, wonderful to connect with people like you who are kind of in the movement, in the struggle together. And thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. And thanks so much for all the work you do, and same for your everyone in Global Parents for Eczema Research. It's really fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'm Nora Cavani, and thank you for joining me on Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, live on UK Health Radio. This episode was brought to you by Alba Health. We analyze your child's gut health, provide personalized nutrition plans, and coaching for the best start in life. We are the first and only company with a large clinical study on child gut health, and our team counts over 1,600 scientific publications in this topic. We translate this complex science into simple, personalized actions for families. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.